This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Joe's mom's cousin Diana, and I'd love to know what life lessons would the older you share with the younger version? You know, besides that date was probably a mistake, and eating all those tacos isn't gonna sit well later. Today, we'll ask our team for their life lessons, including a man who's the founder and CEO of Better Wealth, Caleb Gulliams. And because it's also National Love Your Red Hair Day, for those who celebrate, please welcome the natural redhead behind Afford Anything, Paula Pant, and a guy you can tell is a redhead, Doc G. And now a guy who would celebrate any hair whatsoever, Joe Salcihi.
Oh, Diana Merriam, you're so funny. Ha ha.
I'm determined to say every name of all of your guests wrong. You literally just told me how to say it. I still said it wrong, didn't I?
No,
Gulliams.
I think...
What did I say? Gulliams?
Yes, it's Caleb Guacamole Williams is here with us today. It's exactly what we do. And hey, everybody, welcome to Diana Slaughter's The Open for the Win. I'm Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And happy Friday. We're live here on Fireside. We'll introduce our guest of honor here in a second. That is the aforementioned Caleb, but the natural redhead behind Afford Anything. That's so awesome. Paula Pant, how are you?
I am fantastic. I'm wondering, so does that make me, what's the expression, redheaded stepchild?
I don't, because you are a stepchild, aren't you?
I am not. I am an adopted child.
You're an adopted child. Redheaded, yes. Adopted child.
Yes, I'm the redheaded adopted child.
There you go. And a guy who we didn't know was a redhead because he doesn't have any hair, like me, Mr. Doc G's here from Earn and Invest. How are you, man?
Hey, it's great to be here. You know, many people don't know that Joe and I don't necessarily work together in the same city, but we had the chance to be in the same place at the same time. And Joe, I think that I'm pretty close to you there with number of hairs on the top of the head.
So as
we're neck and neck.
Very seriously, between the gray, Doc, and the lack of follicles, I don't know if anybody would have any idea if we were a redhead.
Yeah, that's why I have facial hair. Right, to make up for what
just
I'm
to prove,
top of my head. Yes,
yes,
exactly, to show that I can grow some.
That's what I had to do too. Distract them with a little beard growth. Yes, and the gentleman behind the Better Wealth podcast, who's here with us today, we're super excited that we finally have him. It's Caleb Williams. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing incredible. You got my name right, and I might just have to trademark the whole Guacamole Williams. So it's a pleasure to be here.
I like that. That's it's got a ring to it, don't you think?
It's memorable. It's memorable for sure.
And you got to think with what you and I and Paula and Doc do, it's all about marketing, dude. So Caleb Guacamole Williams, I think, is a thing.
I love it.
So tell everybody about Better Wealth, because you've got a heck of a YouTube channel. You seem to have a lot of fun. You go after Mr. Ramsey a little bit. Tell everybody about what you do.
I like to say that I run a company called Better Wealth, and I look like I'm 15 years old. So if people would take a second look when they see me talking about money, but I'm a big fan of helping people live their best lives, taking back control over their wealth, being efficient with money. And really, it comes down to living intentionally. And so my story in a nutshell was I worked in a chicken farm. That was like my first job. Ended up working at a bank when I was 17 years old, took over the bank's investment department when I was 19, realized that I didn't know anything about money. So I'm grateful for all the people that stuck with me and just went on a journey, listened to people like you, which was potentially a mistake in some areas. And I learned sense of humor.
Hey, easy.
No, but with all joking aside, I love helping people with money and been impacted by people like Simon Sinek and realized that money has a lot to do with getting really clear on what you want, living intentionally, and making sure that your money, time, and relationships are backed up with that. And so it's an honor to be here. I'm 25 currently. Our company works with people in all over the country. And so we'll see what I can add to this subject.
And you and I met at FinCon, and there is a lot of wisdom between those 2 years, my friend. And if you're running the bank's investment department at what age?
At 19 years old.
Yeah, at 19 years old. I think that says a lot of things. I think it shows what the banking investment climate is like. But it also, number two, just shows, I don't know, what a gift you have. And I'm so happy you could be here with us. And I actually think that there were lessons, Caleb, at 25 that I could have taught myself when I was, you know, 15, 17, those types of things. So I'm glad that you're here. And guys, we got Caleb here. We got Paula here. We got Doc G here. We're going to talk about this guy, Ryan Holiday, who has a piece. Paula, you recently had Ryan Holiday on your show, I know.
Yes, he is a fantastic guest. He came on the Afford Anything podcast to talk about the concept of courage, which is, it's a word we throw around a lot, but you know, to pause for an hour and really have an exploration about like, what is courage? What is bravery? What is valor? How do they differ?
Well, today we're going to talk about what is past mistakes and get into Ryan's brain on that. So guys, let's get the party started. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. All right, here we go. Let's talk about some mistakes that we made in our younger life. Ryan Holiday, as we mentioned, wrote this piece when he was 34 years old. He said 34 mistakes on the way to 34 years old. We'll link to it in the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com if you'd like to follow along. But this piece goes over a bunch of different mistakes that he says that he made. And I want to take the first few of these from the piece and kind of talk about these because, man, I felt a lot of these mistakes myself, guys. He starts off with, if I had to go back and give a younger version of myself one word of advice, it would be relax. It's almost preposterous how intensely, passionately, anxiously I was worked up about certain things, how seriously I took things that in retrospect matter so little that I don't even remember them. Caleb, I'm going to start with you because of the fact that you're 25. Do you feel like this is you sometimes, that maybe you need to relax a little bit?
All the time.
Is it?
I have this whole thing highlighted, and this is one of the areas that I felt like I was going to miss out on things. I was going to just lose my opportunity, and I missed out on a lot of just times to take a step back. I went through college not going on one vacation.
No.
And yeah, I know that it was a problem. So, so yes, I very much can relate to it.
Why is that? Why didn't you go on a vacation? Was it money or was it you're just a hard charger thinking that I got to get ahead now?
Two things. Number one, I hate spending money, very frugal. And then the second thing is I am very motivated by business and I just didn't want like, I don't necessarily enjoy relaxing. It's not something I'm very good at. And so it's one of those things where I actively have to work on this.
Wow.
So I'm here, I'm taking notes because you guys have obviously accomplished a lot and it's not in my DNA.
Doc G, is it in your DNA to relax?
It is not. And first and foremost, let me say that I just want to have Caleb around wherever I go because he's, you know, just saying such nice things about us and our knowledge and wisdom that I think it would just be great to have him around wherever I go to remind me of all this good stuff.
Yeah, as if your ego needs some help, man.
It definitely does, I swear. You know, I was always so destination focused. So what Caleb says and what Ryan says in the article really has impact on me because the destination became so important that I didn't enjoy the journey as much as I could. So I rushed through things and I remember rushing through school. I remember rushing through classes. You know, when I was a young kid, it was about becoming a doctor. And so I gave up a lot of things. I gave up a lot of fun on the weekends. I remember I went to University of Michigan. I didn't go to any of the football games. Like I was in the library studying every Saturday morning when everyone else was, you know, enjoying themselves. And as I got older, I realized that I gave up a lot of opportunities to be happy in the moment for a future that, you know, hopefully was going to be there, right? I didn't expect anything bad was going to happen to me, but a future that isn't for sure. And when I became a doctor and didn't love it as much as I thought I would have, you know, I looked back at some of that rushing I did and asked myself the question, was it necessary? Could I have enjoyed myself a little bit more on the way?
Paula, listening to what Caleb said first and then Doc said, it's interesting to hear this theme. And I think maybe it has to do with the squad of people that we're around, right? People that listen to these types of podcasts, like we all have, are people that are trying to learn and get ahead and move more quickly. Is this just a problem with everybody that we need to settle down and relax a little bit more?
Well, I think largely it's an issue of balance. So certainly there are people who tip the scales too far in the other direction. They live so in the moment that they inadequately plan for the future. But conversely, people, particularly as you said, Joe, people who self-select as the type of people who would listen to a personal finance podcast are typically the type of people who have deeply internalized the idea of working hard today for the benefit of a better tomorrow, sacrificing today for the benefit of a better tomorrow. And while that's a great ethos, you know, anything taken to an extreme becomes unhealthy, unbalanced.
Have you had to relax more as you've gotten older?
In many ways, yes. When I think about how I am in my 30s compared to my 20s, I was way more, and I know this is unusual in like the zeitgeist, but I was in my 20s, very much living in the future, like very worried about, am I going to be okay? Is the 40-year-old, 50-year-old, 60-year-old version of me going to be okay? And so throughout my 20s, I was really focused on building assets, building investments, retirement planning, like the long-term future. In my 30s, I'm way more relaxed. And partially that's because I took the time in my 20s to build a solid foundation. So I can chill out more now knowing that that foundation is built. Partially, it's, I think, also increased confidence. You know, for me, speaking for myself, when I was in my 20s, I was lacking in confidence because I didn't have life experience to prove to myself that I could do things. And so the insecurity drove me. Whereas now I have more experience, therefore more confidence. Therefore, I'm chill because I know that whatever life throws my way, I can handle it.
You know, and there's a pause there on purpose, because as I think through what you're saying, it sounds like if it's your life experience that makes you more chill, then by definition, it would have been harder to be chill when you're in your 20s.
I think so. At least speaking for my own journey, I needed the proof of concept to be able to have that confidence.
Yeah, that's a great phrase. I love that. And by the way, sticking with you, in Ryan's second piece here, he says, when I look back at my own writing, the stuff that makes me cringe isn't necessarily even the stuff I was wrong about. What disturbs me is the certainty. And I'm laughing because this is so me, by the way, Paula. I was so damn sure of myself when I was, even when I was Ryan's age, when I was 34, I was so cocky sure of myself. In fact, I remember having the number one planner in the United States for the company I was with tell me that. He's like, you have an ego the size of Cleveland. I'm like, well, thank you very much. Yes. Why Cleveland? Why is the city that small? Why not New York? Come on. Does that resonate with you too?
Absolutely. You know, this is one of those traits that's, I think, easier to see in others than it is to necessarily see it in yourself. But I certainly know that when I come across somebody who can't differentiate between his or her opinion versus fact, you know, someone who speaks with complete confidence, even about subjects that they know nothing about, that instantly is repellent.
Sounds like an average day on Facebook.
That's why I avoid that that particular website.
It totally does. Caleb, although you're 25, I'm just imagining the number of individuals you've met with and the number of financial issues that you've seen, right? You've seen a ton of different people's financial situations. I would think that you kind of get mistaken sometimes as a guy who would be more certain at 25 than he should be, when really you have every right to be kind of certain that people might be doing things the wrong way.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I've had the interesting perspective of like telling people that can't retire, that want to retire, and like having to help people learn certain things that we all know is like, you know, super common. And it's interesting because even being young, having that responsibility, I've very much learned early on to not let that go to my head. But I will say I relate to that point as well, because 3 years ago, I wrote a book. What is a 21-year-old writing a book on money for? And it's called The And Asset. And I look back and I cringe because I made statements about money that I would not stand by today. And so it's interesting because I can relate to that. Even though I took the more humble approach, I definitely, now knowing what I know now, would just have shut up in a lot of cases instead of like putting my 21-year-old opinion in someone's life.
Is it hard at 25 telling a 50-year-old that they're doing things wrong with their money?
Yes. I've learned the more I talk, the less my credibility went down. And so I learned how to ask good questions. And one thing that I can say, and maybe you experience in talking, I try to communicate more like someone in there. I'm going to say someone more experienced, like you, Joe.
And Steve, whoa, I'm right here, man.
and I try to ask good questions and get down to the root. And so, believe it or not, even when I was 19, 20, the age was really never an issue. I look like I'm 15 years old, but if you can get over that, I like to say that I try to seek first understand. And when people feel understood, they very much will trust you because you understand the things that keep them up at night. And majority of people that are 10 times smarter than me in the financial world don't take time to actually seek first understand where their clients are actually laying in bed at night. They think they care about their spreadsheets and their theories.
And instead, they just care about getting where they want to go.
In a lot of cases, a lot of people are driven off of fear.
Yeah, absolutely. Doc, it's interesting, this idea Caleb talks about, seek first to understand, then be understood. I mean, I feel like that's a pathway to success for young people.
Yeah, I think it is, in just about everything you do. And, you know, I really learned this in medicine. In practicing medicine, you know, it's really easy to put your foot in your mouth when you walk in as a doctor and you think you know everything. And I suffered kind of that hubris that I think we all suffer when we're young and we think we know a lot of things. And after taking care of patients for long enough, I realized that taking the moment to understand the situation better, listening to everyone else around you, gathering all the information before you made an assessment, and then conveying that assessment, whatever it is that you are trying to learn mastery in, the first step is always to listen.
Paula, I want to go to you next, because just a couple down here, he says, why did I move to New York?
Well, I think what he's talking about is not specifically New York itself as an absolute.
But are you about to stand up for New York? Is that what you're going to do? Yes.
Well, but it goes beyond that. It's the concept of, why did he move to a place that was not a good fit for him? Ryan Holiday lives, he doesn't even just live in Austin, Texas. He lives on the outskirts. He basically lives in a rural area where he has farm animals, right? It's like he enjoys that rural life, which is fantastic for him. He knows what he wants and he's living what he wants. And so for a person who enjoys rural country life to move to the most densely populated city in the United States is not a good personal fit. So when he laments the fact that he moved to New York, it's not a jab at something about the city specifically. It's a reflection of the fact that he went somewhere. You know, there may have been certain logical reasons to do it. He might have told himself that it would be good for his career as an author, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, it just wasn't a good fit.
And it seems like with technology now, you can live anywhere.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And one silver lining of the year that we've all just been through is that remote work, which I personally think should have been more widespread and more accepted 10 years ago, because we've had this technology for a long time, remote work, at least at a minimum, now is no longer an aberration. You know, in 2019, whenever I said, oh, I work remotely, people would immediately be like, what do you do? You know, they were so fascinated by the idea that something like that could be possible. Whereas fast forward, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, if I say, yeah, I work remotely, everyone just kind of shrugs and snores.
We had a time management expert on, Ashley Winans, I think was her name, from Harvard. And she said, Paula, that we overvalue our money, but we undervalue our time. And I feel like we do that same thing because we feel like we're going to live forever, right? We have this thing that we think, oh, I've got plenty of time. I'll just do it tomorrow. And there aren't as many tomorrows as we think there are. But I also think that people, especially when it comes to financial independence planning, one of the things that I heard over and over when I was a financial planner was, I'm going to move. I'm going to move to X place. And by the way, Paula, X place is a place that I've never been to before. And I kind of feel like we undervalue the place where we are right now and the friends we have around us. And we overvalue this dream of Paris, or, you know what I mean? This romantic, and I pick Paris on purpose for me, because for me, it's a very romanticized city. We've got this romantic idea of where we are. Is that a problem?
You know, I don't think it's a problem. I mean, certainly, does it exist? Absolutely. Like, grass is always greener syndrome, 100%. But sometimes it is that modicum of dissatisfaction that can be a driver and a motivator to push yourself, to get out of bed at 6 a.m., to do bigger and better things. I think it becomes a problem when you become so attached to the idea. That level of attachment is a problem. But
yes, like a motivating poster on the wall, you're saying it's fine. Whatever whatever it is, if it helps you accomplish your day's goals, it's fine. But my point is, I see so many people that leave their friends. Well, and I'm a guy that did it, right? I left. Mm-hmm. I went to Detroit, had new friends there. Glad that I went. But man, was it so great to be back. And I now appreciate Texarkana far more than I did before I left.
Well, I think sometimes you need that hero's journey, you know, the protagonist.
Am I the hero in the story?
You are. Everyone is the hero in their own story.
Oh, no. Let's just talk about my story.
All right. Well, you followed the hero's journey of leaving home, going off on your big adventure, and then eventually boomeranging and coming back home again.
I'm kind of like Luke Skywalker. Caleb, I would think in your journey at your age, especially, I mean, this idea of location, I would think it'd be a great time for a guy like you to experiment with location, to see, to Ryan's point, like, where is best for me?
That's right. And I grew up in central Wisconsin. By the way, we did this whole virtual thing before it was actually cool. So 21 years old, left the bank, which was, in hindsight, I'm glad ignorance is bliss. And I moved into an office. It cost me $250 a month in the basement of a Papa John's building. Okay. Living at home, by the way, helping people with money in the basement that didn't even have an elevator. And we did everything online. And I will say this, while I cringe at the humble beginnings, I'm so grateful for this thing called the internet, and was inspired that I'm like, I can help anybody, not just in this country, but anyone around the world that has an internet connection. And I will say right now, our head wealth coach is in somewhere, Spokane, Washington, out in the boondock, and they actually have Starlink as an internet connection.
Wow, cool.
And so So that's opened my eyes to this whole thing. But just to answer your question, I moved out to Denver, Colorado a couple of years ago and am really, really grateful for this concept of meeting new people. And I don't know if I'm going to raise a family out here, but Denver has been amazing for me and I very much enjoy the weather.
I've got one more point on here I want to get to before we start talking about our own money changes. And Doc G, let's start with you on this one. And he dives into this idea about the book he's most proud of is his book Conspiracy. He says, the only parts of it I wish I could do differently, the few instances which in retrospect, I was too conscious of what other people might think, particularly journalists. I know you had this thought earlier in your life, didn't you? Where what other people thought mattered. How did you overcome that the way that he did?
So I grew up with this idea that I would become a doctor, and actually that identity became how people recognize me, my friends, my family, etc. And it fit comfortably when I was a kid because I didn't really know much better yet. But I really had to face that as I got older and I started being a doctor and I started realizing that while it was something I was good at, maybe it didn't fit my identity as well as I was hoping it would be. And a big part of dealing with that was dealing with everybody's expectations. I mean, this is how people now saw me, my friends and family, and stepping away from that part of my identity, realizing that it no longer fit, that other people's expectations of me might not be who I actually am, was difficult and took time.
Was there a pivot moment that you can remember, though?
I think one of the hardest conversations is when I talked to my mom about it. I mean, I think it was always my mom's dream for me, and my father was a doctor and he died when I was young, so I think it kind of fit well into that family story. And I remember as I was getting exhausted by medicine and more burnt out, and then realizing that I had the finances to pivot and move away from medicine, there was a time when I sat down with my mom and I said, you know what? I think I've done this and I think I've done what I can do in this field and it might be time to explore other things. And that was a hard conversation.
Wow. Well, wait a minute. What did she say?
I mean, of course she understood, but I think there was some sadness there. Some sadness because she, as well as the rest of my family, had bought into that dream. And what happens when dreams end up not being reality? Most of the time, dreams aren't reality because you're hoping for something that doesn't come true. Well, in this case, it's something that came true, but it wasn't what I wanted in the end. And so I think even though she fully supported me, there was a little bit of letting go of part of a dream that she had for me all those years.
I remember early in my career, I was just tired one day and I was tired of begging people to do the right thing with their money. And I was also tired of begging people to hire me. And I was kind of struggling a little bit with that. And I remember these people came in and they were just screwed. They were so screwed. And I just said that. I said, you guys are screwed. So instead of trying to make it like, hey, everything's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. You guys are going to be great. If you just hire me, I think things are going to be good. I didn't say that. I said, you know what? I think you're screwed. And instead of caring whether they cared about me or cared for me or they wanted to hire me, I just told them the truth. I mean, I put a little velvet on the hammer, but I just told them. I said, I don't know how you're going to get out of this. I know I've got some ideas. Here's some things I think you could do. And I wrote a few down and I found that they leaned forward. And the less that I cared whether people were accepting of me and was just me and told people the truth, the more people wanted to hire me. It was like this big, I don't know, there was a big aha, big change. I want to do one more of these here, which is, why have I so often expected differently of people who have already shown me who they are? Character is fate. Paula, do you believe that?
Character is fate, but you can change your fate. So it is not fate in the sense that it is predestined. And like, it's not fate in the sense of adopting a fixed mindset, right? Like, we want to stay with it. That growth mindset.
But I think he's talking about other people here though, right? That, hey, if this is their character now, this is their character later on.
I mean, he is. Like, there's that expression, like if a thing happens once, it will happen twice. And if it happens twice, it will happen a third time. Like, you know, patterns exist for a reason. Patterns can be broken, but patterns exist. So it's certainly wise that when people show you who they are, believe them. But that said, the statement character's fate, I don't know, the word fate is a fairly loaded word.
It's pretty strong. Absolutely. I think we're going to leave the first half there, guys. Lots more here, by the way, in Ryan Holiday's piece. If you want to read it, we'll have it at the show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. And of course, we're going to have a lot of links to a lot of our shows in our newsletter called The Stacker. We dive in there, give you kind of the 201, stackingbenjamins.com/stacker to subscribe for that. And of course, it's absolutely free and you can unsubscribe at any time. All right, everybody, it's time for our trivia challenge. We have a hootenanny, as Mom says, as we come to the last couple months of our big trivia challenge. I've got good news and bad news. And the bad news is I don't know what the score is right now because of the fact that we're performing a couple shows out of order so that we have our regulars on to talk about the Halloween episode, talk about Halloween. So I have no idea. But Paula, the worst news is I know you're still in last place.
I was going to say, it's a pretty safe bet, even with these episodes being out of order, that I'm still last.
And I also have some bad news for you, Doc G, which is that because Caleb is here, and really, you know, you're not the guest so much as the guy who comes over all the time, and you can open up the refrigerator whenever you want. You just make yourself at home here. You, sir, are going to play on behalf of whoever's in first place, which I think we're going to say is, what, Len Penzo, right?
Sure, you're trying to give Paula a better chance here.
No, what I'm trying to do is give Caleb, our guest, a better chance. Yes, so Doc, you're going to go first playing on behalf of Len. And Caleb, you are sandwiched in the middle, my friend. So you're playing on behalf of my co-host, OG. And I think you met OG at FinCon as well, didn't you?
That's right, I did.
Yes, and so you know how surly he's going to get if he loses, but no pressure. He's surly either way, so I think you're going to be fine. All right, Diana, you ready to do some trivia for these guys?
I was born ready, Joe.
All right, here we go. Here's today's question.
Hey there, Stackers. I'm Joe's mom's cousin, Diana, ready to wow you with this week's trivia question. The game Monopoly was launched on this day in 1935 and has now bored children for nearly 90 years. No wonder no one wants to talk about personal finance. Monopoly comes with 8 tokens, 28 title deed cards, 16 chance cards, 16 community chess cards, 32 houses, and 12 sweet, sweet hotels. So here's my question. What's the total amount of money in the box?
Ooh.
I'll be back in just the same amount of time it'll take you to mortgage Park Place.
Well, that's when you know you're losing is when you've started mortgaging your properties. So, Doc, you got this. No need for you to mortgage properties because you're going to win this thing, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I remember back, what was the biggest denomination of money in the Monopoly thing?
It's been that long since you played. Of course, I had to beg you to play a board game with me at Camp Fi a couple weeks ago.
So I do have kids. And at one point, way back when, there were some board games. And I'm pretty sure we played Monopoly. But I don't remember. Was it like 50 and 100,000? I'm not. Or is it even much less than that? I'm going to take a stab because I really just don't remember. And I'm going to say $50
million. $50 million is for Len / Doc G.
And you don't have to say thank you now, Paula.
Caleb, you're up, man.
Yeah, my goodness. I don't even know where to begin. My competitive nature wants to say $50 million and $1.
Have you played Monopoly?
I have. I have.
Have you played it recently?
No. I'm going to say $25
million. $25 million is in the box. And Paula, you only got $25 million between those two numbers.
I'm going to capture the downside. I'm going to go $24,999,999.
I want to point out that you have a huge upper hand here. But yes, I put my money on your answer, but yes.
Well, wait a minute. Why didn't you guess lower then, Caleb?
Because I'm second guessing myself. So,
nice. Paula, why are you taking the downside here?
So if I remember correctly, I think the bills are like, there's like I think it goes maybe up to 1,000. I think there's like 100, 200, blah, 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 goes up to maybe like 800, and then there's 1,000. So I don't think that we get that. I don't even think we get into 1,000,000. Like, I feel like the actual answer is maybe 10,000.
Do you think it's, yeah. Wow, not much money, yeah, at all. Like, Doc G is off by a magnitude of...
I'm going to blame Doc here because
I've anchored you, but I could have sworn there was like 50,000, 20,000 and 50,000, but maybe I'm off by a factor.
Well, we're going to tell you in a couple seconds, but we don't do that yet. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Doc G, the word anchoring came up just before the break, and you anchored everybody. Everybody's thinking you anchored them maybe slightly high.
Yeah, that's my job is when you put me first, is to throw everyone totally off the scent.
And Caleb, you only went halfway, but you still think that maybe you went too far.
Yeah, I would. If I had a choice, I would change my answer. Paula's going to win.
Paula, as the natural redhead here. I can't tell you the number of times where you thought you had a layup win and you lost.
Right? This happens so often.
Does this feel like a layup win?
It does, but so has every other layup win that I have lost.
Well,
so,
well, guess what?
I've learned just not to have any expectations. Be like water, just flow.
That is it. That's the Stacking Benjamin's way. Just flow. We're going to flow right into Diana with the answer. Diana, well, let's tell everybody what's the answer here.
Hey there, Stackers. I'm Joe's mom's cousin, Diana. We're talking about Monopoly, the game that's been starting arguments since 1935. With the game launching way back then, I wonder how long it was until the first table was angrily flipped over.
I'm putting, by the way, my money on like 2 months. I think like 2 months later, people fist fight.
Yeah, I am with you, Joe. Maybe that should have been my trivia question, but I went with this one instead. How much money comes in a standard Monopoly box? Since 2008, games come with 30 of each bill. 500s, 100s, 50s, 20s, 10s, 5s, and 1s.
Wait. That doesn't mean...
Just in case you're not a math whiz, that adds up to a cool $20,580.
No way.
So that means Paula's our winner.
No way.
Like I said, 50 million.
Yeah. Look at that. Oh, yeah, and even my hunch that it was like probably around 10,000 was reasonably correct.
It was way the hell closer than Doc G's idea.
I was sitting over here knowing the answer, cheering you on, Paula.
Oh,
very impressive.
Thank you,
Diana. I thought you'd be cheering me on after this.
Well, the good news, Caleb, is you're part of a feel-good story here. Paula finally gets the win.
Yes. For my birthday. I got the win for my birthday.
Happy birthday, Paula.
Oh, thank you.
So say maybe Caleb and Doc conspired to give you the win. I don't know.
Sometimes you have to give someone a layup.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely don't want to take that too far. Paula, well-earned win. All right, let's dive into the second half of this discussion. Second half, where we're going to dive into money lessons that we would tell our younger self, is brought to you by Magnify Money. Caleb, you know what happens when you go to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money?
I don't.
Oh, man. You're missing out, dude. What you find is that those tools used at brick and mortar banks every day, like your checking account, savings account, probably not best in class. What Magnify Money does is looks at all the online banking opportunities, over 92% head-to-head rated against each other. You'll find them so you can stop paying so many fees or fees at all on your checking account, right? You can find better savings account interest rates. I found my Allied savings account using Magnify Money, CD rates, and more at StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money tells them that we sent you. We're going to dive in here to the second half of this with money lessons that you tell yourself now. Caleb, you're only 25, but like I said earlier, you have met with so many people. You've seen so many people's financial situations. I was their brother. I remember I meet with 10 to 12, maybe 15 people a week and see their different financial situations. So I feel like you probably have the financial situation of a 40-year-old. What's some advice you'd tell yourself from 5 years ago?
Yeah, I would tell myself to have more fun. When I was little, my parents did this thing called the blessing beans. And we would, anytime we did something really good, they would give us a bean. And I was the kid that they stopped the program and I had a bunch of beans that I accumulated, but never cashed them out. And I share that because I feel like my tendency is just to accumulate. I've been saving a lot of money. I'm very into investing. And my fear is that I'm going to miss the whole reason why I'm motivated to begin with.
Oh.
So that would be the one thing that I would tell my 20-year-old self is spend money on the things that you value and don't judge yourself.
You're missing the fact that money is a fuel.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. What I love about the Fireside app is that we can have members of the audience join us, and we got Justin here with us. Justin, what's a money story you'd tell your younger self that maybe you could do better?
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. Hopefully you guys can hear me. I think for me, it's really about lifestyle inflation. I think the one aspect where we were casually saving and not on this journey towards FI, we just allowed life to happen. And I feel like for many of us, there is an intentionality that we now subscribe to. And that's definitely something that I wish upon my younger self earlier, is just being able to have a goal, have an intention, and plan for it and go for it. Versus when you're a lot younger, you just don't have, that passion or drive, earlier on.
Well, and what's funny too, I think I heard kids in the background. Do you have children?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, when I was a financial planner, Justin, I'd see, first few jobs, and it's not necessarily in this order. You have a family and then you just need more stuff. And next thing you know, you're making these decisions, not based on any type of budget, but to your point, just based on the fact that we think we need it. And then when we started looking, at least in my family, much more analytically about what we need and what we didn't, I realized the same thing. All of a sudden I'm living this lifestyle that I wasn't planning anymore. Did you find that was the case with you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think for us, the one aspect was your social circle tends to dictate that. So you see folks with different strollers or, XYZ, you just feel like you're right. It just feels like that's the norm.
And they've got the tricked out stroller. You got to get the tricked out stroller too.
Exactly. So even, the aspect of entering these life milestones, you don't know any better because you just see your social circle adapt to one standard. And that's just something I wish that, our family has figured out over the years. But, I love what you talked about, is that you just tend to just find this breaking point where you have to be honest with yourself and honest with, what you want long term. And, I really love the dialogue around that.
What is that though? I mean, is it getting, because you've got your side of the equation, Justin, but then you also have what Caleb talked about where he's just hoarding all the stuff, right? And doing absolutely nothing. So while you're fixing up the stroller and making it better with the chrome wheels for no reason, he's not spending a dime. Is the middle ground conversations and budgets? Like, what's that middle ground, you think?
I agree. I think budget is definitely a lifeline that we all can kind of measure against, because I think there is this, the hedonic treadmill that we always talk about, right? Like, there is this equilibrium point where life's fine. Like, we could be okay with, not the top line stroller, that, not shop at, Whole Foods or something like that, right? I think it's just a matter of what you value, enjoying that process, but recognizing too that you don't have to go, you're full on all the time.
Yeah, that there's a choice. Paul, are you down with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, the hedonic treadmill, the keeping up with the Joneses, the fancy stroller or the fancy, you know, whatever stage in life that you're at.
Like, I call it keeping up with the Paulas myself.
Keeping up with the Kardashians, you know, but yeah, whoever it is that you're keeping up with, it's natural to do that, right? It's pro-social in many ways. Like, we are social animals and we imitate those around us. So, you know, if you want to frame it positively, it shows that you're social. It shows that you're good at learning. It shows that you're not a psychopath. These are all positive attributes. But of course, the way that it gets applied in daily life is that it can be, you know, bad financially. So it's all the standard advice. Like, I'm not going to say anything earth-shattering here. We all know that finance is far more behavioral and psychological than it is spreadsheet-based. We all know that changing the mental game and also changing the social game, you know, changing up who influences you, even if that means finding an online community, finding a Reddit community, you know, whatever it is that can help really jive you into that mental game, you know, that's where the battle is won or lost.
Yeah, look at the people around you and surrounding yourself with the right people. Huge, mm-hmm. huge to the win. Caleb, you're on the other side of this. So I want to head back to you. When you hear Justin talk about the chrome wheels on the stroller, for you, how do you have those discussions now about where you're going to let loose? Like, tell me what that discussion looks like.
I think it comes around to this concept of value-based spending. It's like, let's spend money on the things that we truly value. One of our co-founders, one of my best friends, died of cancer a couple of years ago. And I'm telling you, like, I don't want to change the mood here, but that really woke me up. And I very much relate to Ryan Holiday as he talks about where you only have one life and know that it's like very temporary. And I think for me, what that does is it allows me to take a deep breath and say, like, okay, I want to make sure that I'm doing the things that I truly value, because I could be frugal in areas that are actually worse for myself, my health, and the people around me. And so I think that has, like, I can say that, but living that out is key. And I would say I've made some big strides. I'm not at the stroller stage yet, but I'll hit you up, Justin, when I hit that stage. And maybe I can buy your old one.
Justin, Justin can tell you the right wheels to buy. Yeah, the right rims for your stroller. Doc G, how about you, man? A mistake that you made when you were younger that you would tell yourself about now, or something you think that you would tell a younger self, a truth about money you know now, my friend?
Oh, I would tell myself to run more experiments. I can't tell you how many times I had an idea that maybe was a good idea or something that I was interested or passionate in, and I talked myself out of doing it before I even tried. And I think as I've gotten older, I've realized that you can do these really simple experiments and see with very little lost, and maybe you're onto something, maybe you're not. So is there a business you're interested in? See how you can jump in with $100. See how you can get interested or call around and find people who are doing it. Don't be afraid to try or learn. And don't talk yourself out of doing things that truly interest you. Because I think I spent a lot of my younger years talking myself out of doing creative things or talking myself out of even doing business type things because I didn't have the answer immediately and I was too afraid to try.
It's funny. I'm a person that feels a lot of fear. In fact, what my mantra comes from Nike before Just Do It. They had a phrase that really resonates with me that is feel the fear, but do it anyway, because I feel a ton of fear. And it's so hard to fight through that I have to continually tell myself that. But Paula, was it you and I that had a discussion about doing that with, you know, taking these little retirements, if you can, instead of a big retirement, so that you kind of get the feeling of what it's like and what you value once you leave the world of work?
Exactly. Yes. Test driving your retirement or taking little mini retirements along the way. I like to refer to it as not just retire early, but retire early and often. So,
yeah, if possible. And I know some people can't do that, but even if you can't, I would think that we talked about going to these different areas. Like, he talks about moving to New York. Like, if you like an area, I think at the very least go on a few vacations there.
Yes, exactly. It is about that creativity. You know, see if you can negotiate something remote. See if you can negotiate something for 3 months or something for 1 month. Start there. And then do something completely outside of your comfort zone. You know, go to Cambodia, you know, or go to Ghana and spend a month there. find out what that's like, or go live in
Texarkana,
Texas. Yes. You know, and discover what it's like to live in Texarkana. And you may discover an absolute love for the border of Texas and Arkansas.
Yeah. And board game nights at Joe's house. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've got, by the way, Chris Hutchins from All the Hacks I See is hanging out here with us. I'd love if he's around to tell us a money lesson that you would tell yourself now, a guy that's founded some companies and would love to get your take on this. And here he is. Chris Hutchins joins us. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good. Well, thanks for hanging out with us. Weigh in on this. What is a lesson you'd tell a younger version of yourself?
I mean, aside from, you know, buying all the Bitcoins, I think I would probably tell myself that, I mean, similar to the taking risk, I think it, along with the FIRE movement, I always thought save, save, save. And I thought invest in yourself is probably one that I wouldn't have thought of, like spending my money to make things that will make me better in the future, whether that's education, whether that's trying things out, trying new jobs, taking risk, you know, spending money to take a bet on a side project, right? I have a podcast right now. I'm starting to spend money on it while it's not making money. So I'm telling that lesson to myself, not even my younger self, even my older self.
I think anybody who gets into podcasting for making money is sorely mistaken.
Yes. Yeah. I've spent far more than I've made. Yeah.
But I love this idea of investing in yourself, Chris, because this is, as I get older, I found myself doing that more and more. I seriously overpay for coaching now.
Yeah. You can never underestimate what other people can help you achieve, both in knowledge, in support. And it just seems so, you have this young attitude where you're like, I can do anything. I can learn anything. And then you get older and you're like, wow, there's a lot of smart people out there. I should probably spend more time with them. I should probably read more books. Maybe I don't have it all in my head right now. And so it took me a while to pick that up. And I really respect the people I'm around and the things that I can learn from other people. And, you know, spending money to take courses, to take coaching, to even take time to just get away. I've always wanted to do one of these silent meditation retreats that for some reason I feel like of everyone here, Paul is probably done, but I still haven't.
Well, thanks for hanging.
I don't think I could be silent for 10 days. No way.
I don't. Did you say 10 minutes or 10 days?
There's a very popular meditation retreat in Kathmandu that I've seen so many people drop out of, and it's 10 days long. And I've watched person after person make it through like 2 to 3 days and then they're done. So I've learned not to even try unless I actually put in the reps and practice ahead of time.
Justin and Chris, thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes. Paula, you have a birthday coming up. And so what's kind of a thing you'd tell your younger self about you and your money?
You know, I would echo the importance of investing in yourself. And if for anyone who's listening who has a business or a side hustle, or who's thinking about starting a business or a side hustle, invest in that. Despite the fact that when you read personal finance media, when you read blogs or books or listen to podcasts, oftentimes when we talk about investing, we talk in the narrow framework of index funds, stocks, bonds, cryptocurrencies, real estate. You know, we talk about these asset classes because they're, I don't want to say universal, but they're, you know, many people invest in them. It's part of the quote unquote standard retirement portfolio. The returns are easier to wrap your head around. They're easier to track than, you know, a P&L statement on your Etsy store where you sell candles. Like you might not know what your profits and losses are for the first year. If you're doing it scrappy and, you know, doing it in your spare time, sure. I mean, you might not necessarily know what type of returns you're getting. That might come later once you hire a bookkeeper and hire an accountant and get a team that can help you figure out the numbers a little bit more, but that doesn't make it any less of an investment. So sorry, that was a long answer to a short question, but invest in yourself and in any business that you're running.
No, that's fantastic. Doc, that sounds like you talking right there too.
Yeah, you got to earn and invest, right?
So well, where have I heard that before?
You got to put yourself out there and you got to start from the beginning.
Caleb, do you draw a line? You say that you're really frugal, but are you spending time investing in yourself, money investing in yourself?
I spend a ton of money investing in myself and hired a coach and am very, very big on that. I will also say this. I love what you guys are saying and articulating. And a couple thoughts just from maybe the young kid and my thoughts and just looking at people and how they handle their money, is an observation that I've made is majority of the way that people think about their money devalues them as a human being. And if you think about that, I know I just made up a word there, but it's like, man, if we are our greatest asset and everything good or bad, a lot of times we can point it back to ourselves and how we show up and our attitude and all that stuff. It's very interesting that a lot of our mindset around money, like we're doing the exact opposite and diversifying our ability to have an impact. And so that's one thing that I love. And I would just encourage people to really lean in. And that's the only reason I've been able to do what I've been able to do, is like, that's the one thing I have done pretty consistently on, and I'm so grateful for. And it so far has been treating me pretty well.
Holy cow. Paula, did the 25-year-old just drop the mic, say the best thing on the podcast so far?
The phrase diversifying away our ability to make an impact. Wow.
Like what?
Wow. I etched that one into my brain.
That is fantastic. Diane, I want to get your take on this. What's a lesson you'd tell your younger self?
Well, I was in my 20s, I was really drowning in wasteful spending, thinking that I was going to figure out my financial situation when I was making my millions one day. I think that's a lot of people find themselves in that position where, you know, I'll figure this out later. I have plenty of time.
I felt like that, Diana, when I was in Justin's shoes, when Justin was talking about lifestyle creep and family, I just always thought that it was an income problem, right? If I just made a little more money, that my gross overspending would go away. And I'm with you. That's not the case.
Yeah. And I would tell my younger self, you do not have an income problem. You have a money management problem. That was a huge learning for me.
Yeah, that's big stuff. All right, guys, that's going to do it. Nice work. Let's take a second here and talk about what's going on where all of you work. And we'll have our guest of honor go last. Paula, stick with you. What's happening at the Afford Anything podcast, my friend?
On the Afford Anything podcast, you, Joe, join me every other episode to answer questions that come in from the community. And so we've got some great questions. We've got a woman who has 14 years left until she's financially independent and able to quit her job and retire. And she hates her job. And she's like, well, what do I do? Do I stick it out for 14 more years or do I pull the plug, even though that's going to delay all of my financial plans?
Yeah.
So you and I, Joe, we tackle that question plus a whole bunch more questions about crypto and all that sort of stuff.
That one, if I remember right, we said lottery tickets. Or no, you said lottery tickets. And I said, whoa, 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 Paula.
And then you said roulette table.
I did, because everybody knows that that's where the money's made.
Absolutely. And then I said blackjack. Right. Yeah, we take it from there. So that's all on the Afford Anything podcast.
Yes, it's where finer podcasts are distributed. And it's absolutely free, Paula.
Ooh,
it's
you get what you pay for.
It's amazing. Well, it is brilliant. Oh. So you could charge a lot of money for that. Speaking of, how about the podcast that was up for podcast of the year this year, the Earn and Invest podcast? Doc, what's happening there?
So this week is Rewind Week. So this may not be a new episode, but it is a new episode possibly for you. We are going to go back into the old episodes and pull out some good ones to replay on Monday, Thursday. We do that every 8 weeks.
That's awesome. And ones too, I've noticed what you do. You find ones that maybe, I don't know if it was the title or whatever, but the substance is really, really good, but maybe not that many people heard it.
Yeah. So we are coming up on 3 years of Earn and Invest. So I try to go back to that first year and find some of those more interesting conversations and panels that maybe people didn't know about the podcast back then. So if you come to it 2 years in, 2.5 years in, yes, there are some people who binge and start on episode one, but a lot of people stick more with the current one. So I like to pull out those oldies but goodies.
Yeah, it's like if you don't have time to get to the greatest hits, you know, well, you're providing the greatest hits. If you don't want to do the whole back catalog, you've got the greatest hits.
And yeah, we'll pull them out for you.
Also free wherever finer podcasts are distributed. Caleb Guacamole Williams, I'm so happy that you spent an hour with us, my friend.
Man, this is a total blast. I'm grinning right now. You made my day for allowing me to be on your podcast. I also have an aspiring podcast. It's called Better Wealth.
Yes.
And it's also free. So, and I look up to all of you guys in the podcast world. You guys ultimately were the reason I started, starting with good old Pat Flynn. And so I have the honor of interviewing a lot of people on money and talking about different concepts as it relates to helping people be more efficient with their wealth.
Give us an idea of a current episode. What's coming on now?
Well, we just did an episode breaking down Social Security and the different changes that come with that, looking at, you know, the tax increases for some, the cost of living adjustment, and then also just interviewing some people just around the successes and failures. We also focus a lot on taxes and some wealth efficiency. I will also add, my next big project that I'm focusing on is this thing called the cash flow ratio. And it's the money philosophy that I believe that money only does two things. It's either consumed or it's saved for future consumption. And I believe we can simplify the money conversation into this concept of cash flow ratio, two lines, and show if someone's balanced or not based on how much they're consuming, the assumptions of their money growing. And so my next big project is to try to bring that to the marketplace and really help people understand that money can be as simple as a two-line graph doing two things. And so that's like the next big project that I'm working on. And I'm very excited because I feel like the lack of financial literacy is more relevant than ever. And I feel like a lot of times people need a framework on how to think about it. And people like Robert Kiyosaki has helped us understand some powerful things about cash flow. But I feel like there's another step that needs to go to actually show people what that looks like and answer questions like how much you need to save. And so I'm excited about that.
That's awesome. And you know what? We'll link to the Better Wealth podcast and everything that Caleb Guacamole Williams, I'm going to say that forever. And every time I see you, that's what I'm going to call you. Everything that Caleb does, we will link to on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. But the Better Wealth podcast, not just, by the way, wherever you listen to podcasts, but also he's got a heck of a YouTube channel. All right, that's going to do it for now from us. Thanks to you for spending time with us. If you know somebody that this conversation that we had would help them, please send it out to them and make them a stacker, at least for one episode, and help people do better with their money. I like it when I hear that somebody was introduced to us by a friend and then they started getting their money situation together. It's a powerful, powerful thing. And we're honored whenever we hear that from somebody. All right, that's going to do it for today. Diana, what should we have learned today?
So what should we have learned today? First, what would you tell your younger self about your money? Your birthday is a great time to reflect on all you've done wrong in your life. In order to fix it, of course. It's also a great time to see how much you've grown. Second, young people aren't all out there wasting their lives on the TikToks and the snappy chats. Young people are leading the future of financial education. Sorry, Joe. But the big lesson, while $20,000 was a large sum back in 1935, in today's economy, monopoly really doesn't come with all that much money. Forget buying Boardwalk. I just use it to pay cash for a nice used car. Big thanks to Caleb Williams. Did I say it right that time? I think I did. You can find his book.
I think it's Guacamole Williams now.
That's right. Guacamole Williams. You can find his book, The And Asset, wherever books are sold. And you'll also hear him on the Better Wealth podcast. Thanks also to Ryan Holiday, who wrote today's piece. He blogs at ryanholiday.net. Thanks to Paula Pant for joining us. You'll hear Afford Anything wherever you're listening to us now. Thanks to our good friend Doc G for stopping by. You'll find him at the Earn and Invest podcast, our sister show. Give it a listen. Today's show was written by the brilliant Paulette Perach. Know how I know she's brilliant? She wrote the words I'm reading right now. Amazing. While she's not putting awesome words in my mouth, she helps writers power their work and business, and businesses power their words. See how she can help you at thatwriterpaulette.com. I'm Joe's mom's cousin, Diana, and when I'm not stacking Benjamins, I'm working to organize an incredible event about financial independence called the Economy Conference. And it's actually coming up next weekend at the University of Cincinnati. We're kicking off the weekend with a live recording of the Stacking Benjamin show. We also have a full schedule of main stage speakers, as well as activities to connect you with like-minded folks. Learn more and grab your tickets at economyconference.com. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Try not to make any big mistakes out there, or if you do, at least try and learn from them. See ya.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. We don't talk about the show outside of the confines of doing it. And Diana, I apologize. You and I have had so many issues just getting you here that I forgot to ask you about the economy conference. So I'm glad you brought it up because we get to party next week. It is here.
It is happening.
And we talked about it being red hair day. It's probably got to feel like no hair week because you're pulling your hair out.
Oh my gosh. It's all gray. It's just gone all gray.
How much bigger is economy this year than it was last year?
Oof. Well, we've got about 100 more people thus far. Cool. You know, so many people are signing up last minute. Ticket sales are just on fire right now, which is very exciting. And we've got some additional programming. Like we did have activities on Sunday of the event that were like more social activities, but I didn't really market it as a two-day event because the bulk of the event was happening on Saturday. This time I'm really marketed it as a two-day event. It's going to be amazing. So many more people are going to be sticking around for Sunday. So it's going to be great.
It was so good last year. I can't even imagine how good it's going to be this year.
Go on, Doc G. Tell me more.
It was so good last year. It was so much fun and just so well put together, Diane. I have to tell you, you just did such a great job with it.
Oh, shucks. Thanks.
So let's talk for a second here about Paula's birthday. Because when we go to parties like birthday parties, sometimes they go really well and sometimes they don't go that well. Now, it would be fun to talk about parties that went super, but I really want to not hear that. I want to hear about the party that either went off the rails or something didn't go the way that you planned. And Paula, I remember a meeting up with you a morning after you'd had a birthday and one of us had a good night's sleep. And the other one was coming directly from the bar. And by the way, you said, and this is in New Orleans at FinCon. So I can't, and by the way, which I can't believe was, it must have been, what, 6 years ago now? Maybe even seven
maybe
years
longer.
Ago. Yeah. But you said like a few things that were brilliant to me. And then a couple weeks later, I said, Paula, those things were so brilliant. And you said, I totally apologize, but I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. I was so asleep. I had no idea what you're talking about.
My only recollection of that breakfast is I remember guzzling orange juice.
Yes.
I just sitting there guzzling orange juice as much as I could.
Do you remember how kick-ass the place was, though? Was these like high top tables?
I do remember high top tables.
You don't remember being kick-ass?
Yeah, you know, the parties are always great. It's the morning after that's
yes.
But I'm thrilled that I'm able to still say brilliant things and give good advice even after pulling an all-nighter.
I don't know, though. I wouldn't rely on that, right? I wouldn't think, well, I should do that more often because that seems to be my, you know, the way I fly. Caleb or Doc G, a party that you went to that either because of you or somebody else, something didn't go the way that you'd hoped?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think I've had any real exciting parties. I'm a pretty boring person. I don't know if I...
Partying with me at Camp Fi.
Yeah, exactly.
But that didn't really go off the rails.
You know, I'm sure I had a lot of those parties my freshman year of college. I just don't remember any of them.
Just don't. You have them blocked out.
Yeah. They're.
Oh, come on.
Listen, this is going to be bad, but you know how you... Well, I think one of you said earlier that you went through college, didn't party at all. I didn't go through it to a single party in college.
Yeah, but not even like a family party or like a wedding you went to where it just went super bad.
Man.
Has anyone been to a wedding that didn't actually happen? Like, we see that in the movies all the time. Has anyone been to a wedding where someone doesn't show or someone leaves and says, no, I can't?
So no, I've never been to one of those weddings, but I did crash a wedding once. Absolutely crashed a wedding that I wasn't invited to.
Just because Paula wanted cake.
I always want cake. That's a permanent state of being. No, I didn't know that I was crashing it. So I was in India and met some random dude, and he was like, hey, I'm going to this wedding. Want to come? And I'm like, sure. Yeah. Indian weddings. Great. And so we go to this wedding. It was huge, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And after a couple of hours, I'm like, so how do you know the bride and groom? And he's like, I don't. There's one here. There's one in this location every weekend.
So you inadvertently crashed.
Yes, I was invited as a guest of a wedding crasher, and I became a crasher by association.
Now, this is not necessarily an unexpected thing for some big Indian weddings, because I have been to some big Indian weddings and no one would have ever known.
Yeah.
If strangers just walked in, because once you get past about 500 people, I think it gets pretty hard to keep track.
Exactly.
I mean, my understanding from my clients that were from India is that the last name Patel is like the last name Smith in the United States. Do you just say that you know the Patel family and you're good?
Yeah. Or I could just say like, I know auntie.
Yeah.
You know, yes. That's just,
I'm Dr. Shah's son.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. I know auntie and I've got some cousins. My cousin Mohan is here somewhere. Sure. Yeah.
That's it. So tomorrow, Paula, we're all going to crash your party.
It can't be a crash if you're invited.
Oh, man. Does that mean you have to uninvite me so I can crash it?
Ooh, well, I am willing to go through that technicality if you would prefer to crash.
Yes, Joe. So Joe could have his made up badass moment. Yes.
I had a birthday party for my 28th birthday that I planned myself, but the concept of it was I invited my 28 most favorite people, and it didn't matter if you could actually come to the party. It was more like I wanted to identify 28 people that I liked more than anyone else. And I sent them like a really nice invitation, and it was a black tie event in my apartment. Like, you had to wear a black tie. We're just hanging out in my apartment. Oh my,
did they know what numbers they were? Was it like you're number 5?
I would love to get that. I would totally love, Doc, to get that email that says, dear number 27.
Yeah. Well, I made it very clear that they were one of 28. So like, if, you know, come to this party because you were selected among, you know, a very select group of people. But there were certain people that, like, they live across the country. It wasn't really realistic for them to come to this party. So what I did, and I thought this was hilarious, I think I horrified my guests, but the people who couldn't come, I'd ask them to choose a fruit or vegetable. And then I dressed up these fruits and vegetables and put googly eyes on them. I dressed them up in black tie, and they represented the people that couldn't be there. And I like put them on the mantle in my apartment.
Did you do a lot of drugs when you were younger?
No comment. But I will send you guys pictures of these decorated fruits and vegetables because I think they're hilarious. And I posted them all on Facebook at the time. So I'm 34 now. So this would have been 6 years ago. And I tagged everyone, and literally nobody commented. Nobody liked it. I really think that that gag did not land.
I was about to say, now you're talking like my social media presence.
I'll send you guys the pictures. Like, tell me if I'm wrong here, but I thought they were hilarious.
Not as bad as what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago with comedian Paul Olinger and these people that do the baby reveal parties that are a weekend away at, you know, some exotic resort. So I've got to waste an entire weekend, spend a ton of money just to find out whether my kind of friend is having a boy or a girl. Not wonderful. I'd rather go to your googly eye party, Diana.
Joe, Ryan Holiday, what would he say? Turn a maybe into a no. It sounds like you can exercise that muscle.
Just say no. Absolutely. Well, yeah. But then you feel bad, don't you? You're like, yeah, listen, if you could just, if you could text me the detail, that'd be fantastic. Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, Stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? And you could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.